kids would always go, "You're fat." And, you know, you don't really have a comeback to that. So it was funny because I was out with a friend today and she goes, "Well, what do you say to that? Like, what do you say when a kid says you're fat?" I said, "You don't really say anything. You just get sad." I said, "And then you get funny." Mm-hmm. I said, "You either get depressed or you just become funny, because that's your only comeback. And you become the funny kid because that way it doesn't hurt you." And that's what I did.
This is Fat Science, a podcast dedicated to the science of why we get fat. No diets, no agendas, just science that makes you feel better. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
I'm Dr. Emily Cooper. I've been treating patients with metabolic issues for over 25 years. I'm on a mission to raise awareness about metabolic dysfunction and why diets don't work.
Hi, I'm Andrea Taylor. I've been fat, very fat, chubby, morbidly obese, and done almost every diet ever invented. They all worked until they didn't. I've known Dr. Cooper forever, but when I became her patient and we learned metabolism was the real problem, wow, everything changed, and I've never been healthier.
And I'm Mark Wright. It's time for Fat Science.
Wait, does this podcast make me look fat?
Welcome to Fat Science. I'm Mark Wright, along with Andrea Taylor and Dr. Emily Cooper. It's so good to see both of you.
Hello.
So today we're talking about fat stigma in the media and also fat shaming. And I think this is a super important topic because, let's face it, there is fat shaming just about everywhere you look in our society now. And I think we need to change as a society in terms of how we look at people with excess weight, not only how we look at them, but how we treat them. Do we value them? Do we honor them? And then as a medical community, do we serve them in terms of the needs that they may have to treat their body issues if it there is a medical cause? So we're going to get into the science of it in just a sec, Dr. Cooper. But Andrea, for those of you who don't know Andrea's story, Andrea and Dr. Cooper are childhood friends from way back. Andrea started doing just about every diet in the book from a very young age, probably, what, 30, 35 diets in your lifetime?
At least, yeah.
And you've always said, Andrea, every diet worked for a while, yep. And then it didn't when your body rebelled.
Right. When I first came to Dr. Cooper, I was like, "No, they all worked. They all worked." And then she said, "And now you're here. Why?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, I guess. I guess they didn't. You're right. I guess they didn't work."
Well, Andrea, I would love to talk with you about this in a way that I want to honor you. I don't want to bring up, trauma or anything like that. But
I'm really over the trauma.
Okay, good. I'd love to know, looking back at your childhood, when did you realize that your weight as a kid was an issue with others?
We've talked about it a little bit, but I think that it was probably like around late 6, early 7 years old, somewhere around there, when, I noticed the other kids were skinnier and I had like a belly and my thighs touched. They had that thing between their thighs you could see through. That because mini skirts were in, so everybody had a short skirt. You could see right through their legs, and mine didn't. You couldn't see through my legs. And I wanted the mini skirts, and they didn't come in the littler sizes. I was short, so you had to shorten the skirt really tall, really short, and then it didn't look right. So my mother would have to sort of make things. Thank God I had a mother who could sew. And, and then I would be at the doctor for my physical, and he, who was literally the shape of an egg, but he somehow was in denial. And he would say to me, "There's a problem. You can't eat. No dessert for you. And you need to run around." And I'm like, "What? Why? Why am I fat? Why do I have to do that? Why can't, isn't there, what can happen?" And, and everybody would chime in, "Oh, she would be so pretty if she wasn't fat." And, I knew that there was an issue. It was obvious. I mean, it was kids on the playground would say things, and it was pretty obvious. You look in the mirror, you see there's a problem.
You spent your career in marketing.
Oh, yeah.
Andrea. And you, so you've had your pulse on pop culture for decades now.
Yeah.
You never see, you know, obese people as being sort of complex characters. They're kind of always the butt of jokes in entertainment, right?
Always. And I never, like, they never cast anybody. Like, when you would be in a casting session for characters in a show or for commercials, I worked in advertising for a long time, it'd be like, nah, her butt's too big. Oh, she looks fat. She's this. And remember, the camera adds 20 pounds. Or, you know, always, always. Never for the guys. Never for the guys. Or, oh, he looks like a dad. You know, he's a dad, so it's okay. But the women, no. And I worked in fashion advertising, so that was even worse with the models. Oh, she gained 5 pounds. We can't use her anymore. I mean, it was literally 5 pounds on the fashion models. But even when I worked in like regular television, when they were casting people, weight was a huge issue. And no, like what some people don't understand is when you see somebody who is on television plays like the ugly character, if you saw that person in real life, you'd go, she's so pretty. Like ugly people on TV are actually really pretty in real life. The so-called, like from when I was growing up, the so-called fat, chunky, dumpy person in real life, they're thin. They're like, I mean, it's really crazy what we've done as a society about who's fat, who's thin, who's good, who's bad.
I'd love to ask, when you were a kid, Andrea, what the emotional impact was of that? Because I'm just thinking, like, when I was a kid, I had an umbilical hernia for a while until I had a surgery. And so I had an outie, my belly button.
Oh!
I was terrified.
Nobody had an outie.
Right. I was terrified to take my shirt off in PE because the other kids would go, oh, you, ooh, what's... And that was devastating. And that was a minor thing. That's just
right.
A little...
Hey,
so, yeah.
I have curly hair. Nobody ever had curly hair on TV. Nobody had a butt. Nobody had the no space between their thighs. Nobody, I mean, I was definitely the outcast.
But from an emotional standpoint, I'd love to know more about how you dealt with it.
Like I said, you become funny. You become the one who everybody sort of wants to be friends with because you're fun, you're funny, but... And you're friends with everybody, but I also, I am kind of a snob. So I'm like, I'm also so much smarter than these people. So that's also your protective armor. Mm. You're like, I'm smarter than these people. They're idiots. What do they know? And you deal with it like that. I'm smarter than them. And you deal with it on a superficial value, like, Even as a 7-year-old, I was like, I'll just be friends with them to like play with them or whatever, do jump rope or play Barbies. But I'm really not friends with them. I'm so much better than them. I'm going to be living in a mansion in New York City. They're going to be stuck out here and whatever. Like, even as a 7-year-old, I was like, I'm going to go into the city. They're going to be stuck out here. And I did ballet, even though I was like chunky and the ballet teacher was like, you got to lose weight. You're a really good ballet dancer, but you got to lose weight. You cannot be chunky like this. And I'm like, oh, whatever. I'll be the chunky ballerina. And then I decided I don't want to do that. So I didn't. I just quit. Went on to the next thing.
Dr. Cooper, you've seen so many patients over the years. I'd love to hear your perspective on just the stories that you've heard from people who've been fat shamed their whole lives.
Well, it just makes you cry sometimes because it's just unbelievable what people have been through. And unfortunately, a lot of it comes from the medical community also. So that, you know, even hurts more when you hear that because it's so disappointing. But we hear all kinds of stories, you know, of adults, similar to Heather, who we met with on a previous episode, who told us that every time she went to the doctor for anything, a stubbed toe or sinus infection, it was always turned around and made about her weight and in a scolding manner. So that was a common type of shaming we hear. I had a patient who was a triathlete training for Ironman, and she was actually trying to lose weight because her weight was increasing while she was training. And she was eating about 1,200 calories a day and training 20 hours a week. And she went to the doctor, and the doctor told her to buck up and put the fork down.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the doctor said that. And so these are just terrible stories you hear. And where it really gets me is when a child is involved. You have an innocent child coming in, kind of like Andrea's age that she described, six, seven years old. And the parents are, you know, caught off guard because the provider may suddenly say, well, you know, your BMI is too high, right in front of the child, and say things like, literally, they say things like, take away the juice and lock the refrigerator. I mean, in front of this child. And this still happens today. Oh, so yeah. That is very difficult for a child to get over because they're hearing that for the first time. They're questioning their body image, you know, when they really didn't have a concern prior to that. And I've had parents just pull their kids out of that doctor's treatment and come running over to see us because of that concern. But it's just everywhere. So, you know, and not even just in the medical community, but the ads that we see all the time. You talked about the characters that, you know, are on these shows, and they're never the star, they're never the smart one or something like that. Yeah. But if you look at the ads too, the way they dress people that have a higher body weight, it's kind of frumpy, not professional looking. And so, and unfortunately, that's also seen in, this is what really gets me, some of the pharmaceutical ads for metabolic medication have models that are dressed in a frumpy way and literally grabbing a bag of potato chips that says stress on it. Now, if that's not fat shaming, I don't know what is. And this is a drug company that is making an ad supposedly to help people who have medical obesity. So that, coming from that angle, that is just seems way off base.
Right. Like, I was looking at all the characters from when I was growing up till like late, you know, later on. Like, you got Fat Albert, Jabba the Hutt, Fred Flintstone, Homer Simpson, Peter Griffin from Family Guy, Fat Amy from Pitch Perfect, Jackie Gleason from The Honeymooners, for, you know, the really old people. But like, all of them are idiots, sloppy, dumb, slow, kind of jerky. I mean, that's who we had. And you're right. Like, they are always kind of frumpy, ugly. Like, none of them are successful. And then came Oprah, and we're like, oh, look, there's Oprah. And then all she did was go, I hate myself because of my weight. I hate my weight. I hate my weight. And every magazine cover was like, Oprah's getting fat. Oprah lost the weight. Oh, but now she's fat. Now she's fat. So here's this woman who's so successful, so like millions and millions and millions of dollars. But all anyone can talk about is she got no husband because she's too fat. And it's like, oh my God. Like, she could be the most successful person in the world. So and true. All anyone can talk about is her butt.
That's terrible.
And I think, you know, we mentioned it earlier, but the double standard, a man with a pot belly is like, oh yeah, he's just a dude, a guy, a dad. But if a woman had a big pot belly, it would be like, oh boy, she should lose some weight.
And I think there's just herself go.
And, you know, I worked in broadcasting for many years, and you know, there is clearly a double standard. You can be sort of a balding, overweight man and still be a news anchor, but you cannot be a balding, overweight woman.
Oh God.
And be taken seriously as a news anchor. Or anything else. No. Dr. Cooper, I mean, I'm curious about the double standard that even some doctors like Andrea's, you know, pudgy doctor who was pointing his finger at her saying she needed to cut out the food. Why does that double standard still exist, do you think, in the medical community?
I just think it's part of having that authority as the physician and in that position of power and getting into that luxury type role. But I was thinking too that I've had patients also say that the doctors, they brought their two kids in, and the one that had the higher weight was much more active, you know, involved in sports, ate really well. And the other one maybe sat and watched video games. And the doctor immediately just started assuming that the one that had the higher weight was just sitting around all the time and would just right away say, you know, you need to stop eating cookies and you need to stop doing video games. And that's another thing, that just jumping to those assumptions based on a size of a person, that is just really another way of fat shaming. And then when it comes to the media, I wish that we would go into all those stock photos and stock videos and just purge it out of the system. The ones that are, whenever they do a story about anything that has anything to do with obesity or breakthroughs of medication or heart disease or anything, you'll see just a big belly coming at you. No face, no,
right,
nobody, just a belly. And it's always holding like a milkshake or a big, huge
soda.
Slurpee. Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. Or French fries, or sitting on a bench with French fries. How many times have we seen those offensive images? You know, what does it take to just go in there and clear those out and put some images of people of all sizes just doing things people do, playing basketball, going to work, driving nice cars? I mean, I don't get it.
Andrea, I'd love to ask you this about marketing. I mean, you know, media gets a lot of blame, but I've always felt that media and the larger culture surrounding it, it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. Is the media shaping the public's perception, or do those perceptions exist and are just reinforced by media? Because when I think of the double standard, you look at who the top people are who get promoted in businesses, the people who get elected as politicians. You know, look at any sector of our society, and the people who rise to the top are generally thinner, good-looking people, both men and women.
Right. Thinner, taller.
Yeah.
That's how it just has always been that way. And it's very funny because, you know, here in LA, things are a little bit different. And I see younger people, I see it shifting a little bit. And the people leading the way are Black and Hispanic kids, so much more comfortable with themselves. And sometimes I look around and I'm like, oh my God, if when I was 17 or 16, I wish I could have felt that comfortable with myself to dress that way and to feel that way. Right now, I don't even feel that comfortable walking from the shower to like look like that. I mean, so I don't know if I would go that far, but you know, to wear like a crop top or whatever, and not have the perfect, so-called perfect body. So I don't know if things are changing slightly and people are feeling more comfortable about not having the perfect abs, the perfect whatever.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing that I see changing here. But it's definitely, I mean, I hate to say it, it's not really happening with the white girls. It's happening in more of a minority culture here. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of interesting that I see that. And I think it's to be applauded. You know, you don't have to be perfect. Why do we have that? And what is perfect?
Wow.
What is that? Who said? Who's they? That's what I always wonder. Like when we say, well, they say that you have to have those abs. Who's they? Who are they? You know? But I like that people are loosening up a little bit. And I think that's a great thing. And I do see, I feel like it's a token sometimes, like, and you, it's so obvious sometimes, like when you're watching a commercial and you're like, oh, look, there's the, they've got the person who's a person of color, a person who's in a wheelchair. Oh, there's the fat one. There's the this one. There's that one. So is that progress? I guess, but we never saw it before. So maybe that is progress.
Yeah. And at least today we have people like Lizzo who are very open about her body type, and she's not ashamed, and she's very proud of who she is.
Right. And now she's getting feedback though now, because now she's lost weight. So it's like, oh, before she stood for people who were proud of their weight, and now she's losing weight and people are mad at her. The poor girl can't win. She can't win.
Yeah. So Dr. Cooper, I'd love to just talk a little bit about, as a medical professional, before we judge someone, and I don't think it's ever a good idea to judge someone, but what should
but
we think about medically? Oh, sure, we all do. But what should we think about from a medical standpoint before we judge? Like, well, what's a healthy way to look at, you know, those of us who have had excess body weight at some point?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think it should be the same way you look at a person of any weight. I know that sounds impossible, but
it's kind of hard.
Well, but the truth is that you really don't know anything about a person's health status from their size or shape. You really don't. So you could be looking at someone, you know, who has not really much at all excess body fat, but they might have terrible cholesterol, elevated blood pressure, prediabetes, that metabolic syndrome, and they may be very unhealthy. And then someone else that may carry extra weight, maybe it's just weight that's superficial, subcutaneous, not in their organs, and they have great blood pressure, they're even fit, you know, they work out and they're fit. So how would you ever even make a judgment about someone based on their size? That's something that I guess because of my background, I know that, but I realize that most people are not aware of that. And that's what we really need to do is, that's part of the stigma, basically, is to just quickly say, you're unhealthy because you're that size. You're slow because you're that size. You're not smart because you're that size. You're not beautiful because you're that size. All the things that, you know, our society has fed us.
Does our own perception of our own bodies impact how we think about fat and how we think about judging others?
Well, yeah. I mean, your perception, your body image, and your sense of satisfaction or dissatisfaction with your body image and your body weight, your body size, it does affect your metabolism. So that's the crazy thing. They have done studies that have shown this, that just having body image dissatisfaction alters your metabolic hormones and causes your body to go into like a weight defense mode where it's more easily able to store extra body weight to protect you from starving yourself, basically.
So is that
of
like
what your intentions might be? Yeah.
So that's like pretty much every woman I know.
Yeah. Well, it's true. And I think there've been some really fun studies in the past where they looked at scans of the brain and they showed women and men images of people with high body weight. And these, they picked out subjects that had never been on diets, never had a concern about their weight, actually had normal weight, and showed them these images. And the women's brain activated in the fight or flight region, and the men, nothing changed when they were shown those images. So that was really interesting, though. And that led to some of these like checkout stands trying to eliminate the images, you know, when you're checking out. Go to some of the media-free checkout lines at the supermarket and stuff like that, because the covers of magazines just promote that type of fear that's detected on scans of the brain of women. So even if you've tried to avoid it, it's just permeated our culture so much that I think most people have that sense. But what's really fascinating is the change in the hormones and the biology that actually ends up favoring fat storage when you're not satisfied with your body, or you're actually thinking, the worst is if you're eating a meal and you're thinking, I shouldn't be eating this because I'm not satisfied with my body. At the same time, that actually alters the leptin levels, which is the signal your body fat sends out to let your body know you have enough body fat. So it suppresses it. So then your body thinks, oh my gosh, I'm running out of body fat, and tries to increase the storage. It's crazy.
You know what's really crazy is that even quote unquote normal weight people, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, oh, I shouldn't have this cookie. I'm like, why not? And, but I think that idea of dessert is bad, mm-hmm. is so pervasive in our society that it it's just, we're all whacked out.
Mark, if you're out with a bunch of guys, I got a question.
Yeah.
If you're out, this is a sexist question. I accept the sexism label here. If you're out with a bunch of guys during that meal, will it come up? I shouldn't eat this. I really shouldn't eat this, but, or I'm not going to eat it. I'm not going to eat it. We're not ordering dessert. Or do they say, eh, whatever?
I've never heard a guy say,
really?
I shouldn't eat this.
I've never had a meal where it didn't come up.
Yeah. Listen, I have. I have to disagree. Some of the most dysfunctional people I have met in this area are men.
Really?
And, oh, yeah.
And I love that. I hate that.
They're
well,
men.
Maybe my friends are just
that's their inner voice.
Yeah. And they're your age. They're usually your age, Mark.
And you know, my friends all have a little bit of a round stomach. So.
You're hanging out with the right people then.
I think it's more healthy, your friends, Mark.
There's definitely a trend in mid-age males of super hyper-focus on body image, body leanness, stuff like that. It's to the point of like serious dysfunction in that group. So I think we don't want to make it sound like it's only a women's problem, because there really is a growing level of men with really off balance body image issues. But, you know, the
good
other
for
thing,
them. Catching up with us, ladies.
The other thing that's so interesting is it's not just how you feel about your body. It's how people in your household feel about their body that affects your biology. So they've done studies on little kids that grow up in a family where a parent has dissatisfaction with their body image. And that actually affects the child's metabolism, their insulin levels, their leptin levels. They have shown this, that they've taken away any dietary changes. They've even seen in really young babies under age two that the moms, if the mom is on an intentional diet, which a lot of moms are after pregnancy, mm-hmm. it affects the child's BMI and visceral fat accumulation. So this is a really fascinating how our food environment, because if you're a child, you're really dependent on the community, you know, to supply you with food. Yeah. And we probably do have ways of sensing, I don't know if it's through pheromones or what, sensing the community's intent around the food supply. And if there is this sense of restriction, it may panic the younger organism, you know, to try to start conserving energy just in case there's a food shortage. And so it's a lot of it's common sense, but they've actually proven it out in science. So
yeah,
that's what's pretty interesting.
When you've treated patients with eating disorders in the past, Dr. Cooper, and what I think is so fascinating about our brains, like right now I'm under 200 pounds for the first time in a long time. And I think at my high, I was over 250 when I first came to see you. And yet when I take my shirt off, all I notice is that little bulge above my belt. And it just makes me think, though, that, I mean, one of the hallmarks of an eating disorder is that person's deception that their brain has created, that they're skin and bones. And yet when they look in the mirror, they see fat. And how that mm-hmm. happens has always been so intriguing to me. But that seems to be at the center of all this, is that our own perception is reality.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I think it's true. It's like that judging and checking against others, not just the body shape and size, but what you're eating. And that shows a lot of insecurity in that area. So I don't know how we get over that, but I think I always tell our patients, just don't mess with that. Just feel comfortable, befriend that little bit of fat. It's your friend. Fat is actually our friend. I mean, we need some body fat, actually improves our health. So because the body fat has certain key roles, it emits some very beneficial hormones, and it also helps with managing toxins and things that our liver can't really handle, that it protects us from exposure to a bunch of things. And so especially fat that's distributed in the lower abdomen and upper thigh area, that can be actually quite protective. So I know I tell patients that and they're like, really?
That is your friend. What?
Yeah. And so the worst thing you can do is just try to chase those little small amounts of body fat for what? What, you know, for some kind of superficial cosmetic reason. And when you're risking that you're going to push your body into this state of mistrust and defensiveness to really ramp up the hormones, getting them into a stage of that's why I called my book The Metabolic Storm. That's what happens when it goes too far and it just like cinches into this like little spring-loaded system that the minute that it gets a little too far, now you're in a state of promoting extreme weight gain, crazy appetites, fatigue, you know, and then you're on a terrible roller coaster and that weight cycling roller coaster that's been associated with really unhealthy outcomes such as visceral fat accumulation, cardiovascular risk. So not good.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap things up, I'd love to talk with each of you about this final thought, and that is encouragement for people who've been fat shamed. And I think if we're honest, I'm sure that I said unkind things to kids who were overweight when I was a kid. I'm sure of it because everybody did. And when I look back, it just breaks my heart to think of how that impacted those kids who were classmates. But if you could give some advice, Andrea, and then Dr. Cooper, for that person who's dealt with fat shaming, just some encouragement, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we have a long way to go as a society, but before we get there, we got to deal with this stuff.
I would say if you were parents of a kid who's going through it, I think the good thing that my parents did was say they gave me support in every other aspect of my life so that I felt confident enough to like basically feel superior to those other kids and be like, whatever, those kids are losers. And really, I mean, yeah, sometimes there were horrible days, but I know it's terrible to say, but I did feel superior to the other kids. And I was like, great, they can call me names, whatever. I know that I will come out triumphant. And yeah, sometimes life sucks, but life does suck. And if you have the confidence and the wherewithal, find out what do you have that's better? What do you have that's fantastic about you? And I think, and from other parents I know who have kids who have issues, it's like there's something about you that's fantastic and something about you that's amazing. And who cares about that? Like, yeah. That's just something that's you that is not, like now we know it's something that's a problem, that's a medical issue. It's not your fault. Like the idea now that you can say to a kid that that's not your fault. So it's like, okay, so that's not your fault. You're the best, whatever it is. You're the best singer in the world. Can that kid be the best singer? No, loser. You're a fantastic kid. You're the best piano player. Celebrate that. Yeah. Like get over that kid. Like I think you have to celebrate what the kid is best at. And also if it's you, understand that you're a fantastic person for whatever else it is. The fat is just something that's there, you know, and do the best. Like I always say, make the best with what you got, you know, bring it out, celebrate what you got. If you focus on the thing that's the sucky thing, you're just going to be depressed and sad. And that's like not fun.
Yeah, that's great advice, Andrea. Dr. Cooper, what about you?
Well, I just love everything Andrea said. It just is so great and so true. I just think it's real important also for parents not to just buy into this, what, you know, the fear around it and the, you know, elevating the body weight imbalance as like the most important crisis that this right. child is dealing with, and see the child for who they really are. And as the same way that Andrea was describing, you know, who is this person? And that's what we should all be doing for each other, is seeing each other for who we really are and understanding, as we understand more and more, that weight imbalance is kind of an end result of a combination of genetics and a lot of different environmental factors that kick it off. We have no right to blame a person for an elevated weight. It just seems so kind of not very smart, not very intelligent to go that direction.
And we've talked about this in the past. And the very last thing that a parent should do is to buy into that idea that restricting calories and running more, like playing more soccer, and especially restricting calories during exercise is so, so detrimental to that kid's metabolism. To not buy into that, to fuel the exercise, to fuel when they're hungry and when
Absolutely.
They're active. So, well, I feel more encouraged now after talking with you two about this. We've got some, we have a ways to go as a society, but I feel like we're starting to take some steps forward. And so I appreciate both of you. Thank you, Andrea Taylor, Dr. Emily Cooper, for
Thank
another
you.
Edition of Fat Science.
No diets, no agendas, just science that makes you feel better.
I'm Mark Wright. Thanks for listening to Fat Science with Dr. Emily Cooper, a Work P2P production. New episodes drop every Monday. If you've enjoyed the conversation, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. This production is for informational purposes only and is not intended to replace professional medical advice. Join us next week for another episode dedicated to the science of why we get fat. No diets, no agendas, just science that makes you feel better.